from 6 on 2FM.
The Johnnies, it's Tuesday the 29th of March and this is Game On. Well, coming up today, Nadine Doherty will be with us to talk about the latest players heading to the AFLW. Aoife Murray gives her thoughts on the Camogie League final. Roddy Forsyth will join us to reflect on Scotland's brilliant result against Spain last night, and we'll preview the weekend Irish basketball. If you want to get in touch, please text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Welcome along. Nadine Doherty is with me in studio. Nadine, how are you?
I'm great, Marie, and how are you?
Yeah, enjoyed the weekend's ladies football. We'll get onto that a little bit later. Donegal have Aidan Rourke installed for the foreseeable anyway.
Yeah, well, no other choice really, I'd say. Trying to keep a bit of consistency in there. I just don't think much will happen for the next couple of weeks. And listen, what is it, 3 weeks? 2 weeks until Ulster? So whatever input he's had so far, the lads are obviously happy enough with him in there. And yeah, he'll keep going along with Paddy Bradley. And look, we're not hoping for too much. I know that's a bit defeatist, but...
keeping the expectations low.
I think we have to now at this stage.
It's probably wise. Okay, look, we're going to turn our attention to football last night, and Scotland tasted a victory over Spain for the first time since 1984. It was a night to savour at Hampden Park. I'm delighted to say that Roddy Forsyth is with us here to reflect on the evening. Roddy, how are you?
Oh, still coming down, Marie, still coming down.
it was
like you guys
good?
After the Grand Slam, yes.
Well, it wasn't us after the France game, that's for sure. So let's have a chat about it, Roddy. It felt like one of those special nights. But the thing about it was that usually when you go and beat a team like Spain, or if Ireland had beaten France on Monday, it would be one of those games where it's backs against the wall and you nearly kind of nick the win. But it wasn't the case for Scotland against Spain. They did really well.
Yeah, correct about that. And strangely enough, when you look at the statistics for the game, Spain had more than twice as much possession than Scotland, and twice as many attacks. They had 50 to Scotland's 24, and they had 585 passes, whereas Scotland had 149. So you would think, looking at that, that it would be backs against the wall, but in fact, when it came to chances created, they were exactly equal. And when it came to conversions, of course, of those chances, Scotland took the lead early on through Scott McTominay, and did the same again. He scored 6 minutes into the game, and he scored 6 minutes into the second half to really seal the victory. Even then, there was lots of hard work to be done, but there was never the sense that sometimes we've had with Scotland, what the Tartan Army call the on-off moments, when things are going wrong, where you feel, well, it's only a matter of time before we cave in here. There was never that sense last night. When Scotland were pushed back, the crowd responded by driving them forward again, and they were able to take advantages of spaces in the Spanish defence. There were 8 changes last night. The entire Spanish defence and the front four had been replaced, and it looked as though they were getting used to each other, a fact that Scotland took advantage of. So this wasn't a scrappy performance, it wasn't a backs against the wall, it wasn't a siege, it was a determined, responsible and quite cute performance, I must say, because Steve Clark got his tactics bang on.
Yeah, he did, and he's made such a brilliant start to this Euro qualification campaign. Now, he did come out afterwards and say that it's a big night, it feels like a step forward, but it's still only 6 points and you don't qualify with 6 points. But saying that, 6 points is a really nice place to be after a couple of games, Roddy.
Especially with Spain only having 3. Both teams, of course, had got off to 3-0 wins on Saturday, Spain against Norway and Scotland at Cyprus. And curiously enough, in the Cyprus game, Scotland did look a little more at odds with themselves at times, partly because Cyprus defended very deep. At times there was 10 players behind, outfield players behind the ball. Scotland, one feature of this Scotland side is the strikers don't score, or they hardly ever score. They do hard work battering up the front against brick walls in the form of Cyprus, for example. But it's very much left to the midfielders. And we saw that with John McGinn getting another goal to take. He's Scotland's top scorer with 16 goals. But then Scott McTominay had played 37 games and scored only once. And Steve Clark adjusted his position. He'd previously been used as a centre-back or in deep midfield. Adjusted his position to put him into a role where he was encouraged to break forward when the opportunity presented itself. And that's exactly what happened in 2 occasions. So Scotland, in that respect, were bold, and they got their reward from McTominay.
Yeah, tell us about Scott McTominay. I'd say he's fast becoming a hero and a fan favourite over there.
Yes, and the thing is that, as I was just suggesting, his role hadn't been previously clear. He was sometimes being asked to tuck in central defence in a back three, sometimes a back five, sometimes a back four, sometimes playing a little advanced of the back line, not appearing as a scorer. As I said, he had managed one goal in 37 appearances, which is very low for an attacking midfielder. So as I say, the fans were never quite sure of him. But the fact that he got two goals on Saturday against Cyprus, and in, at a time when Scotland, although they were winning, looked as though they were vulnerable, and again, as I say, those on-off moments were being cited by the Tartan Army. But he came on to the pitch, and in fact, he was one of three substitutes because Lyndon Dykes and Ryan Christie also came on. And it turned out that they were masterly substitutions by Steve Clarke, and they combined to create both of the later goals, and those goals put Scotland into a far less tense position than they were able to see out the game. What we didn't expect was the jump to the level of performance that we saw last night against a team like the Spanish, who are 32 places higher in the FIFA rankings. So although they too are going through a transitional phase, there should have been enough golf in class, and they have people who can score goals, that you would have felt that Spain would have prevailed last night. And in fact, at one point during the game, I turned to Pat Nevin, the former Scotland international, and said to him, if we had been told before kickoff that midway through the second half, one of these two teams would be flailing wildly, would be misplacing passes, would be getting chips and crosses wrong, would not be in their correct positions in the field, we would assume that it would have been Scotland on another bad night. Instead, Scotland have inflicted this on Spain, and Spain are playing badly because of the pressure that's being put on them in key positions.
So after the game, Rodri criticised Scotland's rubbish approach to football, and he's since come under a lot of criticism himself for saying that. But he did seem to suggest that there was a bit of gamesmanship, or a bit more than gamesmanship going on. He said it's the way they play, you have to respect at the end, but for me it's rubbish because it's always wasting time. They provoke you and they always fall. Bit harsh.
The interviewer put it to him when he'd said that in fact the same was being said about Spain, at which point he said, I don't understand the question. Clever use of language and facility at that point. You know, I felt that Scotland were, I don't like to use the word professional for things like time wasting, but Spain were plainly not time wasting because they were desperately trying to get back into the game. However, Scotland were cute in the way that they did so, in the way that we see at the upper levels of the game for the most part. So I don't think that you can take his criticism as being wholly unfounded, but it did have the air of an excuse on a night when things went badly wrong for Spain.
Andy Robertson, for some time he was getting criticised because he didn't give the perception was that he wasn't performing as well for his country as for his club, but that seems to be behind him now, just given the last two performances. Do you think that criticism was fair, and do you feel that maybe he has now silenced those critics?
One of the difficulties that faced Steve Clarke was that his two most accomplished performers were playing in the same position. Kieran Tierney and Andrew Robertson are both left backs, and they both like to get forward. So he solved that problem by switching Scotland to a back three with Tierney on the left of it, and putting Robertson in what is effectively a role of wide midfielder or wing back, depending what you want to, how you want to see him operating. And he instructed them that they could overlap each other or undercut each other, come in field, and that's been working very well. So well, in fact, that last night the first goal for McTominay came from the left, and it came from a forcing run by Robertson that caught Pozzo, the Spanish fullback, out. He slipped on the pitch and left a space. The cutback went to McTominay, 1-0. The second goal came from the left as well, but this time it was Tierney who did the run, and what a run it was. It was from midway inside the Scots' own half, helped break up a Spanish attack, set off down the flank. He was pursued, shrugged off a tackle, moved into effectively an outside left position and cut the ball hard across the box. It took a deflection, which was fortunate for McTominay because it fell perfectly. But McTominay was making a tracking run. And if you watch McTominay now, he makes those tracking runs when either Robertson or Tierney makes the run forward on the flank. And that's what they were doing. And yes, you will not find a critic of Robertson today.
Steve Clarke has done a really good job, and you know, it feels like he's been recognised for it now, and deservedly so. Is that the case?
Yes, and if you look back at his first squad 4 years ago, 2019, it was a Euro 2020 qualifier against Cyprus, as it happened. And because of that, it gives us a very helpful way to make an exact comparison. If you look at that first squad that he named, 20 of the players were not in contention for the weekend squad or this week's squad. So that was a major turnover. And of course, as we know, it's difficult to accomplish turnovers and produce the results that you want, but he did that. He qualified for Euro 2020, even though it was postponed to 2021 because of the pandemic. They put up a very good performance against England at Wembley, where Billy Gilmour was the man of the match, goalless draw, but two other defeats saw them out. And afterwards, talking to him a few months later, I was asking Steve Clarke about that, and he said that he felt strongly that it had been to Scotland's disadvantage that they did not have experience of a finals, a major tournament final, since 1998. Well, they do have that experience now, and to my mind, and to that of many others, it showed up last night in the performance against Spain.
So they travelled to Norway before hosting Georgia in June. How likely is it now, do you think, they're going to qualify for the Euros?
Well, if you ask me after that, and Scotland have got 12 points, I'll think it's very likely. But we've learned that amongst our or-no moments were defeats by Georgia, the ambushed Gordon Strachan's side back in 2015 when they were looking good for qualification, and they've done so a couple of times in the past. Norway, as we know, are a strong side and can be very strong at times. It was a disappointment for them that they were beaten 3-0 by Spain, and even more disappointing in some ways that they were held to a draw by Georgia. They didn't get full points out of that. So Norway have got off to a campaign where they've conceded 5 points of a possible six. So anything Scotland can do against Norway, if Scotland can win that game, which is in Oslo, then they would be, I fancy, in a very strong position indeed.
Roddy, thank you so much, as always, for joining us and bringing us up to speed on all things Scotland. We'll be keeping an eye on you and probably feel a little bit inspired after that Scotland result last night.
Many thanks, Marie.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Nadine Doherty is still with me in studio, and we're going to turn our attention to ladies football. Nadine, I want to start though with the AFLW, and I think it's probably fitting that we just talk about Cora Staunton. We did have her on the programme earlier in the week. She announced her retirement from the AFLW. She had 50 appearances with the GWS Giants, and you know, the first player to head over there, and she's left a huge legacy. And look, the legacy is that there's lots more following in her footsteps.
Yeah, so it's the legacy she left here, and the amount of people and girls she inspired here that transferred over there. Mm-hmm. You know, because there was AFLW really wasn't on the radar here at all, Marie. And I suppose you just look back at history and you think, you know, if that hadn't happened in Mayo, you know, the fallout in Mayo, would Cora have ever gone over there? Probably not. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of mad how history, I suppose, has a huge impact on what happens down the line. But listen, I mean, she's incredible over there. Like, the amount of records, I actually didn't realise until during the week, like, that she held that number of records over there. And while I didn't watch the AFLW at all, and I don't really, any highlight reel you see, she's in it. And not only from Irish players, like, they absolutely loved her over there. I was actually chatting to Fiona McHale during the week, and I was saying to her, any chance that Cora would do a Cluxton now? And
she's only 41. I think you can say only 41 now when we're seeing the likes of Cluxton coming back.
Yeah, but like, I mean, the shape that Cora's in.
Same professional sport only a few months ago.
Yeah, why not?
Oh, I mean, wouldn't that be interesting? Yeah.
You know, Mayo aren't lighting the world up at the minute. They're lacking a bit of leadership up front, probably. I think it'd be an interesting one.
Yeah, it would actually, yeah. But
you'd love to see it.
Yeah, anytime we've asked her in the last few years, she's always been quite adamant that the door is closed there with Mayo. And even for her to go back, I think she probably mentally had to close the door on Mayo as well, because I'm sure that the way it all ended wasn't the way that she'd want it to have ended. And also, when you're going back, Nadine, you'd want to be going back thinking you're going to win an All-Ireland. You look at Cluxton and I'm thinking, right, he probably sees something there. Would you be going back if you're just going to be competing?
Well, I mean, we'll get on to, I suppose, the league in general. But Marie, I just feel across the board, it's probably the most even championship it's going to be in a long time. I mean, we don't have a Cork a million miles away from everybody. We don't have a Dublin a million miles away either. We have the current All-Ireland champions really struggling. We have the All-Ireland finalists from last year, Kerry. Okay, going going very well. They're in a league final, but I mean, they haven't won anything. Galway the same. I know Mayo came third from bottom in the league, but I mean, they'll have to look. But they're probably the team of this league that will look back at their performances and think, God, there were really fine margins there. Mm-hmm. Like they have a huge amount to improve on, but they also have the ability to improve on it, if that makes sense. So I don't know, if you add Cora to the mix. You know, I mean, you look at Donegal.
It would be great.
And I know we're probably doing a media thing on it here. You know, get her back. But, you know, why not? And I mean, you look at, and I know absolutely, you know, mentally she closed that door and it was a really difficult time. But Fiona McHale went back. Yeah. Sarah Tierney went back. You know, a lot of those players have gone back. And I don't know, you never know. It's very much a changed Mayo squad now to what it was those number of years ago. But, and like, she's in serious shape, so.
We'll be watching all the games now.
Yeah, we will. Yeah,
in the squads and who's knocking around.
Yeah,
for sure.
Exactly.
Just we may as well stay on the AFLW for now, because there was big news over the last few days with Aisling Maloney and Anna Rose Kennedy heading out to join Geelong Cats. Now, the suggestion is that they will see out the season, but to have them, I think especially Aisling Maloney, like Aisling Maloney is one of the reasons that I watch women's football, because she just lights up any pitch that she's on. She's just amazing. She's just such a standout player. She really adds to the league. Anna Rose is an up and coming player, but Aisling is that, she's that X factor player.
Oh yeah, and Anna Rose has really, I mean, year on year, the last 3 or 4 years, I think her college experience has really brought her on as a player, and Niamh Martin is fantastic as well. But I was just looking at it this evening, like Orla Dwyer and Aisling McCarthy as well, like that's the spine of Tip, you could say, if they were around. Look, if they're knocking out to the end of the year, they'll say the concentrating championship and so on. But I mean, if you have a professional contract waiting for you, I'm not really sure how focused you're going to be on the season ahead. It's really disappointing, and it just brings us back to that conversation, Marie, like all these players going. And I've had loads of conversations over the last week or two with current players, past players, and what kept coming up, there were two things actually that kept coming up that I found really interesting. It was how players are treated here, like the basics, that again was highlighted with Cavan. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's happening all over the country. But then you bring back the question, you know, why are the men not flocking to the AFL? It's because they're treated really well here, and it's basically a professional setup and they get treated like professionals, whereas with the women's, they're training like professionals, but it's not a professional setup. Another thing that came up with a lot of players was how, like, the games are on TG Cahir, and TG Cahir is the sponsor of our championship. I mean, that has to be highlighted. You're basically promoting a sport against your own. And I thought a really interesting one that came up was, I had listened to Niamh McLachlan on the AJ podcast, and she was excellent, as per usual. You know, Niamh is and really big insight into why she's going and so on. But she said that she was going for a new challenge. But I was talking to a few people about it, and they said, well, she hasn't achieved her challenge here, which is to win an All-Ireland. Mm-hmm. See, you know, it's quite interesting. So it's thrown around a lot. But I just think, you know, even our ad campaigns here, I think we really need to lift our game. And, you know, a lot of, we spoke at the start of the year about league games. They're in substandard pitches. So I know here in Ireland, okay, we can't compete with the sunshine and we can't compete with the lifestyle over there, but we can compete with everything else.
Yeah, there has to be ways to make it better. Now, I do think, though, if these women have opportunities,
oh, listen,
go do 100%. This, like, live your life,
absolutely,
be a professional athlete.
Absolutely,
those opportunities weren't there a few years ago. So many people broke down barriers to make it happen. Like
100%,
they deserve every opportunity that comes their way. I just love to see them at home as well. If we can,
that's it.
We can have the best of both
worlds.
I know,
which was great for a while because of the season, but that's just going to keep changing, in that their season will lengthen and it'll overlap. And, you know, and even looking at, you know, I suppose Vicky Wall, the biggest name who's gone in a while, she played at the weekend, she played a half the weekend before, in serious shape. Like, she is in serious shape, but the game was bypassing her by, you know. So it's going to take these girls a while to, like, that's our top player, it's going to take them all a while. So you'd wonder, you know, what effect are they going to have that post-season? You know, and if they're back for championship, is that gap too long?
Yeah, no, I think it was evident, it has been evident in past seasons that they do get there. It just takes that little bit of time.
Yeah, I don't know if they all get there. You know, even going back to Sinead Goldrick, the year that Dublin lost to Meath, the first year Meath won their All-Ireland. Now, Meath were absolutely phenomenal, but I don't know if that was the Sinead Goldrick we would have seen had she not gone. And listen, it could have been, who knows, but I think absolutely some players totally get back to it straight away, but I don't think they all have. Yeah, you know. Well,
maybe we just have to accept that it's a changing landscape now.
That's it. Well, do we have to accept? I'll still cry. I'll still get
out. As the numbers increase, I think that's going to be
big time.
Like I love watching them on Instagram, and I see the promotion of them and the life that they seem to live. And I know it's only social media, and it isn't always reflective of what it's like, because you are at the other end of the world. And so many of the male players have gone over there and struggled with the homesickness and the loneliness. Like, it is a difficult thing. But there seems to be more of the Irish players over there, more of a community, because the numbers are greater and they are able to kind of build these lives for themselves over there and be professional athletes. And they're getting something, as you said, that they're not getting here. And, it's just so hard to compete and to argue against that. So, look, let's see what happens.
Just one more thing, Marie, even like money wise, and we'd spoken before about the tiers, but Niamh McLachlan in that interview made such a good point. She's going there for 4 months. She's tier four, so she's getting $40,000, but it's condensed into 4 months. Yeah. So she's getting 10 grand a month with everything else paid for. So when you put it that way.
Yeah, and then you have the cabin girls who can't fill up their cars with diesel, and they've got to get their manager to pay for buses. So look, it's very different scales really of the different female sports. Okay, let's park that though, because we do have a bit of a conclusion now to the leagues, and we know it's going to be contesting the finals. And look, the big one is going to be Kerry and Galway, but just reflecting on, I guess, Kerry's journey, and they have been on a journey, and in fairness to Declan Quayle and Dara Long, like, they have built that team up now to make them real contenders. We saw they got to the final last year, but it's consistency of performance that they seem to be achieving and delivering year on year and improving, because, you know, they were at the stage where, they weren't competing, and they weren't, you know, they were always second fiddle to Cork, and getting to those latter stages was difficult. But now every season we're looking at, we're expecting them to be there, and look, all credit to them, and see what happens now. They have that league final, as you said, they need to go and win that and then see what the championship brings.
Yeah, it's incredible actually, Marie, because this time last year they were preparing for a Division 2 final. Mm. And they'd lost, I think, the previous two Division 2 finals. So really, in the space of a year,
it does.
The momentum was building. What I think has happened in Kerry is that the two guys you mentioned, they also have a brilliant coaching staff. I know, like, Ger O'Shea's in there, one of the best Gaelic players to ever kick a ball. She's in there. They just have good structures. I'd imagine they're really getting looked after, Marie, really well. And I think they just have a panel who have really, really bought into what they've been told and what they've been sold, essentially. I suppose looking at them in the league, the only defeat came against Cork. And I think that day, you know, their manager did allude to the fact that they have Munster Championship in a couple of weeks, and they were going out to win the game, you know, they made a lot of changes and so on. But there's a real air of confidence for sure. It's nice to see in a team. There's a lot of trust on the pitch. They're being given a huge freedom to play football, which is really refreshing. You know, they're not totally being pulled back and reined in by a big structure. They've great autonomy. What's really good about them, Marie, they're breaking gain lines really, really quickly. They really are. Strength is up front massively. I mean, Sheaf Roche, Niamh Carmody, Louise, you know, there's a great Lorraine Scanlon in midfield is massive. The day actually against Cork, when she was missing, I think that's what they were missing the most, you know, more so even than their forwards. But what I would worry a little bit about for Kerry, while their subs did make a bit of an impact now against Galway at the weekend, I'm just not sure they have that huge strength and depth. But we know in ladies football, you actually don't need 25 players, you know, like in the men's game, we're very different in that way. I think they probably have 18, you know, realistic people who'd be challenging for a place, and then after that they're young, you know, they're coming through. But listen, it's very hard to fault them at the minute, and that's been honest. And to be honest, I at the start of the year I probably didn't rate them as much as I do now. I felt that their performance in the All-Ireland final was very poor, and I think I felt at the time maybe it reflected where they at, that their success had been a bit inflated, and that they played a Mayo team in the semi-final that were quite weak. But they've really pushed on and they've progressed. And
silence the critic.
Absolutely, yet again.
What about Galway?
Yeah, listen, Galway have been consistent. Absolutely. They haven't been the nicest to watch, but what they have been doing is building very well. They frustrate me a little bit in that they are playing that possession defensive game, but they've the best defence in the league, Marie. They've really kept it tight. And in fairness to them, they've actually played on a load of days when it's been miserable. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, they've played a lot of games at home, so that's had a bit of an effect. But for them, I suppose, they've only scored two goals throughout the whole league, which is kind of interesting considering the forward line they have. But it just shows you, I suppose, how defensive they are playing. But look, they're really organised. We spoke at the start of the year about that Kilkerran influence, you know, two Club All-Irelands in a row. They have seven or eight of those girls on the panel. So it's on paper, Galway are so strong. I mean, they really are all over the pitch. And at the minute, and I know they lost that game to Kerry, but, you know, it ebbed and flowed and it didn't really mean much. But what I think at the minute that Galway have been missing for so long is they have that mental strength and that mental mm-hmm. resilience to deal with things. Like, I don't think that loss to Kerry at the weekend will have affected them at all. And yeah, it's a hard one to call. We might come back to it in 2 weeks beforehand. Well, but
so those games are on, the Kerry and Galway game is on the 15th of April at 5 o'clock. The Armagh Laois game, that is the Division 2 final, is on at 3 o'clock on the 15th of April. And then the Division 3 and 4 finals are on the 16th of April. So that is Antrim versus Leitrim in Division 4. In Division 3, it is Clare and Kildare. So we'll preview all of them in depth closer to the time. Thanks, Nadine. We're going to turn our attention now to Camogie. Aoife Murray joins us now on the line. Aoife, how are you?
Good, good.
So we know our ladies' football finalists. We also know our Camogie finalists as well. So Cork and Galway are going to battle it out in the Division 1 very Camogie League finals. Two best teams get there in the end, do you think?
I feel hard by saying yes, because I think Tipperary, in fairness, were so close. Like, they were so close to that, I suppose, what, first league, and I don't know how many years. But mm-hmm. I think on the balance of things, I think probably the two quite competitive teams in the final. I think, yeah, just a real harsh one for Tip at the very end.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where you look back and it'll either have built character and be something that you can draw on mm-hmm. or else it'll be something that you'll find really difficult to get over. And you just hope for Tipperary's sake and for Camogie's sake as well that it's one of those ones that they just build on. Because in fairness, Aoife, this Tipperary team are going from strength to strength now under their new management.
Mm-hmm. They are, and I think what's really good, I think, look, both of us have spoken for so many years regards to their reliance on Cath Devan in the forward line, Mary Ryan in their defence. And I think what you've seen this year, and I think both of us have said a number of times, going, they need other players to start stepping mm-hmm. up. And I think that's definitely what you've seen in the league so far. The McGrath, Heffernan, these players really coming to the fore and not having to rely on Cath and pulling them out of the fire at the end. I think if you're Kelly and you're looking at that league campaign, you would be so, so happy. Because I think as well, what's really impressed me about them is their work ethic, their work rate. It's dogged, it's bringing teams into a dogfight. But then having those players, like Heffernan has had a really good league, you know, coming out of UCC, I think was our college, and senior in Ashburn. Like, that's a great plus for them to going into championship. And to come down to, I suppose, the last 5 minutes in their game and maybe the last 5 minutes yeah. in the Cork and Galway game, to literally be that far away from a final, as long as they can keep that momentum, and I'm sure the camp is pretty positive at the moment, in particular with those other players really stepping up and having that work rate. They obviously are working really hard for each other, and I think, look, you can coach that sometimes, you know.
So Kilkenny beat them by just a point, 14-13. The Cork and Galway game was Cork 1-10, Galway 1-11, and the Clare Dublin game was 1-10 apiece. So there was really nothing between any of the teams this weekend, which is brilliant because you wanted to be competitive. And Camogie, in latter stages of championships and leagues over the last while, has been really competitive. Mm-hmm. So they do leave it all out there when it comes to these kind of final games. What about Kilkenny, though, and not getting to that final? Do you think that maybe after last season, and just, you know, yourself, it takes a while to get going again, that mm-hmm. maybe it's not a bad thing?
I don't think so. I think, look, obviously you don't want to be in that last game of the league, do you, near the bottom of the table, but I do think when you look back at the injuries, mm-hmm. Changes, etc., you know, to be able to pull it out of the fire at the very end. And I suppose they always say winning's a habit, isn't it? And for them to be able to pull it out of the fire at the end of the game, I think it shows good fight. It also goes know-how on how to win games. So I think if you were Brian Dowling, you might actually be looking forward to having the break to see can you actually get some of those injuries back and as I said, kind of bring those newer players into the fore even more. So I think at the end they will be quite happy. They know they've got a bit of work to do, but look, even at this stage, you'd have him as one of your favourites for the end of the championship.
I can just picture Brian Dowling now kicking back and watching that final round and seeing what's ahead of him and coming up with some sort of a plan, because he always comes up with some sort of a plan. He'll have rejigged the team, or he'll be turning backs into forwards. He'll be doing something anyway, that's for sure. Just we were talking about potential of Cora Staunton coming back playing. We were talking about Stephen Cluxton as well. I know Sarah Dervin isn't at that age profile yet, but seeing her back is always such a good thing because she's such a big player.
Yeah, and I think, look, in fairness to Sarah, she's, I don't know how many years of service she's actually given to Galway, but for a woman who has lifted the cup numerous times for Galway, for putting in year after year, I think it's a good sign when I see managers actually allowing maybe the more older players or the more experienced players, I should actually say, giving them that little bit of time for the league. I know certainly when I was towards the latter end of my years, I would... you'd nearly need those couple of months just for an extra bit of respite to be able to rest your body and mentally and emotionally, being in a far better place to come back. And I think, you know, it's great to see Colm Murray giving her that bit of time and maybe to reflect as well, because she knows herself that she mightn't even be a starter for come championship if she's back this late, but she'll know herself that she's got so much to give to the panel. And I think it's a great sign of a setup, allowing players that extra bit of time. Certainly, as a Cork woman, you know, you're nearly disappointed to see her come back.
She's a winner.
But, and I have to say, though, in fairness, the defence from Galway was excellent at the weekend. Really hunted in packs. Every time a Cork player had a ball, there was a player on the ball carrier, but they also had two, three shielding any options. The amount of times the Cork forward got themselves in a corner or in a bit of space where all of a sudden they had no options. And I think we overcarried once or twice or fumbled it. So certainly I think the likes of Shauna Healy really stepped up into that leadership role. So I think if you're Sarah Dervin, I suppose not a whole lot could be asked anymore, could be asked of you. And having those other players really step up into the leadership role should allow her that huge amount of comfort to, you know, have time to enjoy it as well at the same time.
Just a quick word on Dublin relegated to Division 1B. They secured that 110-110 draw against Clare, but they did need that 8-point win to put Clare down instead, which ended up in insurmountable at the end. Is 1B the right place for Dublin?
Well, actually, looking at 1B so far this league, like, it's been very competitive. Looking at the likes of Waterford, Wexford, Antrim, putting up big scores. Would you like to be down there in that group? I wouldn't, because it's going to take it's going to take you to really hit 100% very early in the year for you to come out of that 1B and get back up to 1A. It's pretty difficult. Even Limerick, seeing Limerick and down there and floating down towards the latter end of the table, it's a tough group to come back out of. But in many ways, looking at Dublin, they started poor and they kind of slowly arced their way up towards the latter end, just getting better a little bit too late in the league, whereas Clare was kind of nearly coming down the other opposite side of the arc. And I think they probably can count themselves quite lucky that a draw got them over the line to stay in 1A. But look, again, Dublin, I think they made great strides last year in Championship, so you would be hoping that the fact the arc was going up, that they could continue that into the Leinster Championship.
Okay, thank you so much, Aoife Murray. We will chat to you a little bit later on about, or closer to the time for that league final, and go through it on in depth. We're going to turn our attention to basketball now, and we have two pairs of tickets to give away for this Sunday's Super Saturday doubleheader, where you can watch both the misquote.ie Champions Trophy Final and the insuremyvan.ie Super League Final. Simply answer the following question. Where will this weekend's games take place? Is it A, the National Basketball Arena, or B, Croke Park? So text your answer and your name to 51552 and we will get in touch with the winner after the programme. So for anyone who is interested in watching these games at the weekend, they will be live on TG Cahir from 11:50 on Saturday. There will be tickets available for the big doubleheader. Go to the Basketball Ireland website, which is ireland.basketball. So the big women's game this weekend will see the address UCC Glanmire defend their misquote.ie Champions Trophy against DCU Mercy. And as I said, that is live on TG Cahir, and it is at the National Basketball Arena on Super Saturday. Now, Hannah Thornton of DCU Mercy and Karika Rashid of UCC Glanmire, and they're both with me.
Don't lose your running order!
The line. I'm so delighted, Hannah. Thanks so much for joining me on the line. I didn't have my running order in front of me. Rule number one of radio, always have your running order in front of you. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
What's the equivalent of that mess up in basketball is when you're missing a free throw, is it?
Yeah, you're probably being subbed off if you're doing that.
Well, I think the producer was close enough to subbing me off.
No, I can't do that.
All right, as well. Thanks so much for joining me. Karika is with me as well from UCC Glanmire. How are you, Karika?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you so much for joining us. I'm delighted to say that we have those tickets to give away. So please do enter that competition. So look, it's another big weekend of basketball. And just first of all, Hannah, like we you know, we're always talking about the growth of the game and just even having the game on the telly at the weekend. How big is that for you guys?
Yeah, it's massive. I was just talking to the guys in Basketball Ireland today about the growth of the game, and especially having it on TG Cahir on Saturday is just huge. It's huge for the representation of the sport. People are going to get to watch it. I think we're up to maybe like 11 or so games being played on TV or something like this throughout the year with regards to international games and with regards to finals and stuff. And compared to a couple of years ago when maybe it was just maybe two or four, It's a massive change for the sport, and like it just encourages more people to get interested. So it's fantastic to have TG Cahir broadcasting so many. It's great.
Does it add a little bit of pressure though, Hannah, being on the TV?
Maybe. You might just want to make sure your hair looks a little bit nicer or your tan is good or something like that. Yeah.
Karika, for you now heading in to this final at the weekend, just the fact that it is on television and it feels like the game has a really big profile now. Are you starting to feel that?
Yeah, 100%. I agree with everything that Hannah just said. Representation and growing women's basketball is very important. In America, that's a big thing that's happening as well. So, yeah, I just think it's a really important opportunity and, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
So just heading into the game then, Karika, just it feels like or it seems that it's the best offense and defense up against each other in the game. What kind of one are you expecting?
I'm expecting a physical battle. just like all the other times, you know, like you said, we got top defense versus top offense. We're looking to better our defense and looking to, you know, just get to it.
Hannah, is it fair to say that you might be underdogs heading into this?
Yeah, I mean, Glanmire are ranked number one. They won, like, the regular league, mm-hmm. and we are ranked number two. And they've had an amazing season. But we played Glanmire only a couple of weeks ago, and it was a really close game. So I think from a spectator's point of view as well, it's going to be a great game to watch because hopefully both teams will bring what they brought the last time. Now, Glanmire did edge us out just in the last couple of minutes, so we're hoping it might be a little bit different, but it's just going to be a tough game. It'll be the same though, yeah.
Karika, that's what you want, though, isn't it, heading into a big game like this? You want it to be tough. You want to be challenged. You want to put on a show.
Yeah, and we want the fans to be interested in watching us if we continue to keep coming back, you know what I'm saying? Last time we went up to DCU, it was basically the final minute we edged it out, so it's not going to be, you know, any easy feat on either side by any means. Like, I'm looking forward to the battle that we're going to have for the next 40 minutes.
Hannah, am I right saying that Dana Finn had her final appearance before she departed for Australia in the semi-final?
Yeah, we played Dana last Sunday. She played for Trinity Meters and she's off to the land of Oz now, playing AFL. So excited for her because obviously I play with Dana on the national team as well. And to be honest, Dana is just an all-around athlete, so it's going to be a natural progression for her to go over there, and we're really excited to see how she gets on.
Nadine Doherty is with me in studio, former Donegal player, and we've actually spent about 15 minutes already in this programme talking about players heading off to play in the AFLW and saying that we hope that they always come back and play that the sports that we get to see them here. Dana's one of those players who can throw her hand at anything, obviously. A third sport for her now. But I think no matter what, when somebody like that of that talent heads away, Hannah, there's such a loss to the sports that they play here as well, whether it be Gaelic football or basketball or whatever it is, because they're the people that inspire everyone around them as well.
Yeah, they are. But I also think it's a great opportunity for her, like, the athlete that she is and all the athletes that are going over there at the minute, it is unfortunate that they're leaving, but they see that as, like, they're seeing that as a job. They're getting paid for it. Jane is not really getting anything here for her athleticism. So I think when she can and she's young enough to go over and enjoy it, get a bit of a hub, have a great time, try a new sport, I think it's a great, like, for any player here to try it. I think it's absolutely amazing to go over.
Yeah, and Karika, we are going to be speaking to John Dawson as well, and we were making the point that, you know, it's great then that we have a sport here that people can come from other countries and basically do what the ladies footballers are doing in Australia, coming over here and lighten up our leagues here in Ireland as well.
Yeah, I've had a great time. This is my first year. You know, I just graduated college and, you know, kind of got thrown into a new atmosphere, but, you know, you get to experience new cultures, new opportunities, and, you know, I'm just grateful for the whole experience and, you know, can give all thanks to God for that.
Well, I'm not going to ask you who's going to win because you're playing against each other, but I will wish you both the best of luck, and thank you so much for taking the time, Hannah and Karika, and I'm looking forward to watching you on the telly at the weekend.
Thank you very much for having
me.
Thank you. Thanks. Game on. Now, welcome back. We heard about the misquote.ie Champions Trophy earlier. Now it's time to turn our attention to the insuremyvan.ie Super League playoff final. University of Galway Marie and Emporium Cork Basketball will contest the final, which will also be live on TG Cahiran at the National Basketball Arena. I'm delighted to say that Matthew Sweeney of University of Galway Marie and John Dawson of Emporium Cork Basketball join me now on the line. I'm going to go to you, Matthew, first, because it's your first season with the University of Galway Marie, and it was probably a good time to join, I'd say.
Yeah, most definitely. Like, coming to the University of Galway Marie has been an absolute privilege for me, being able to come into a team with such great talent all the way through 1 through 13. It's just been an incredible experience thus far, and I'm very lucky to be in this position that I am in today.
And John, you're new as well, having joined the club this season down in Cork. How are you finding it?
And it's been lovely. My time here in Cork has been nothing short of a blessing. I've enjoyed it.
What is it about it that you've enjoyed?
Honestly, the people. I think people make the place in anywhere you go. So the people of Cork, more specific Ballincollig, have been a second family, a family away from home. And they've treated me with respect. They treated me like I was their son, their brother, and they've always shot me straight, so I appreciate that.
And in terms of the competitiveness of the league, John, how have you found it?
Man, I found it really competitive, man. It was a, I wouldn't say it was a shock, just because I think everywhere you go, people can play some basketball, but I found it exciting. I love competition. I love seeing good basketball being played. I love being a part of, you know, hard-fought games. So the league, man, as a whole, felt pretty balanced, pretty talented, and just well overall.
To you now, Matthew, just in terms of having the games on the TV at the weekend, how important is that to keep growing the sport, because it is moving in the right direction?
Oh, yeah, no, it's an absolute blessing that the game has been shown on TG Cahir. It's a very big step for basketball in general throughout the whole country, and we're just lucky to be in the position to be on the TV at the weekend.
The Americans always bring the glamour, I have to say, Matthew. Everybody loves going to see them. There's such an aura about the Americans when they come to town, just for the league as well, to have that kind of an X factor. Not that we don't have our own X factors as well, but just having the Americans in the league, how good, beneficial is it?
Oh, it's been amazing, especially for us at the moment. Like, Jared Haynes has been playing outstanding along with Zach Lye. They've both put in their shifts throughout like each game and everything like that, and we're just lucky to have them. Even throughout the village, you can see all the like kids that Jared helps coach and everything as well, and the same with Zach, they all put in so much effort, and it's not just the basketball, it's the communities too that they help as well.
Yeah, my kids play up in Aina, Matthew, and Josh is up there, and he has encouraged them and inspired them, and they love going to training because they all just muck in.
Most definitely, yeah, they're a big part of the community. It's not just the basketball, it's the community as well, and have them around is just, it's just amazing.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Let's have a look at the semi-finals. And to you, Johnny, both actually came through pretty tough semi-finals. But to beat the local rivals, UCC Demons, John, how much is that going to benefit you when you go to the final?
I think winning games like that does nothing but help you. You know, it builds team morale, it builds chemistry, and most of all, it builds character. UCC has a great run this year. And coached by a great guy, had a great player, actually a great team led by MJ Randolph, and winning a game like that when we're the underdogs and everything is against us and our backs on our wall, I think it was just a testament to our character and how far we've come.
Matthew, you guys came through a tough semi-final as well against Belfast Star, but you came out the other side of it, the right side of it.
Most definitely, yeah. It was a very tough game. It was a close game throughout the whole four quarters, but luckily we were able to pull out throughout the end of the game. Like me seeing like Jared Haynes, it just shows that people can perform towards the end of the games. Like Jared Haynes hitting a big three-pointer at the end of the game to kind of help solidify that win, but it's always been a challenge. The whole game was a challenge, and we're looking forward to the weekend now.
So what kind of a challenge are you expecting, Matthew, from this Cork team?
The Ballincollig are an excellent team. We definitely cannot undervalue them at all in the slightest. Many of their players, or a good few of their players, have already won like the trophies. If you think about Kieran O'Sullivan, Adrian O'Sullivan, Keelan Cairns, they've all won this before. And we're just kind of going in with that underdog mentality. And nothing comes easy. Like, it's all hard work, and we definitely can't undervalue them. They're an excellent team.
And likewise, John, what are you expecting from University of Galway, Murray?
I'm expecting nothing short of excellence, man. This team has been great all year. This team has been at the top of the league all year, and that's for a reason. You know, they win the cup, and they're in the league final, man, and that's just a testament how great they are. So we can't be anything less than amazing. You know, if we don't bring our best, we'll lose this game for sure.
Well, it sounds like it is going to be a keenly contested one. Matthew and John, thank you so much for joining us and best of luck in the final.
Thank you. Thanks for having us on.
Now, a little bit earlier on today, Irish Paralympian great Jason Smith announced his retirement from competitive running after a glittering career spanning two decades. Let's hear from him.
When I look at what's been and a really an incredible career, and I look at those incredible moments like competing at the Games, competing in front of thousands of people at a time, or even Tokyo nobody, putting on the vest, winning gold medals, and those are moments that you will never replace. You can't replace those highs.
That was Jason Smith speaking earlier on. Greg Allen is with me in the studio. Greg, it's going to be a strange place now not having Jason Smith in Paralympics.
Well, the first thing I'd say about Jason is that he was, by his own standards, a proper sprinter in world terms, in terms of obviously Paralympics, but also in, you know, the full open championships. And this was a thing that I experienced in 2010 when I saw him at the European Championships. He was the first athlete in the history of Paralympic sport to be to compete in an open championship. And he made the semi-finals, and he was one place off making the final. That's how good he was. 10.22 seconds, quite apart from all of the Paralympic glory, six medals, two doubles in 2008 and 2012, and then the individual 100s in Rio in 16 and Tokyo in 2021. Like, that's a massive span of a career to be dominant. He actually won the gold medal in Tokyo by 0.01 of a second. So he was a terrific competitor as well as having the talent. And this is a Paralympian who has been training at the top level for two decades, and he's still in great shape. He actually said that he's retiring at a point when he still feels he's in great shape. But there is a point also where you step off the stage. Mm-hmm. And why not step off the stage at the very top, unbeaten in major championships? So just to summarise, you know, he's the third fastest Irishman of all time, six Paralympic gold medals, 9 world championship gold medals, 6 European gold medals, and never beaten. I mean, he was a phenomenon as an athlete, and I think he's going to be a phenomenal inspiration in his role as a strategic manager with Paralympics Ireland. I mean, who else would you look up to? I mean, I remember him being compared to Usain Bolt in 2016 or in 2012 at the Olympics because he had done the double, and Bolt had done the double. So he was kind of the Paralympian Bolt. And that's quite a moniker to live with for the rest of your life.
Yeah, for sure. And he has left some legacy behind him and lots more to do, no doubt. Greg Allen, thank you so much for coming in. Nadine Doherty as well. That is all we have time for this evening. Bette De Silva is up next. RTE 2FM.